I'm a little surprised that they let you back into the United States, but I'm glad.
I am too. I was a little nervous. I had written Rachel's phone number on my hand just in case they took my phone. I was nervous. I really did.
Call this one.
Yeah, call the number. I was actually quite nervous because the hype in the news, and I turned my phone off as a little trick. If you turn your phone off and then you need to present it to somebody, you have to turn it back on, but you need to type in the code. So if you're on face recognition for everything, of course, when you first turn on your phone, you need to type it in. And if you're ever in a pinch, that there needs to be a court order to be able to type in your PIN. There's no court order needed for facial recognition. They can just hold it to your face.
Interesting.
It never got that far, but all the news makes it seem like they're going to scrutinize everybody. And in fact, I came in through Detroit, and there was nothing amiss. It looks just like any other time, just rude Americans telling you what line to be on. As typical as ever.
Yeah.
Versus when I got into England, when I landed into England, I went through passport control right at Birmingham. I landed right in Birmingham. Oh, this is funny. So I'll give you guys a little travel tip. Try this. It works great. It's worked for 20 years, except for this time I'm about to tell you. As soon as I get on any airplane, I find a pocket in the hanging open cabinets that is before my seat. No matter if it's like right as soon as I walk in this case, as soon as I walk in, I throw it right in any cabinet. Doesn't have to be right over my seat because that makes things difficult. So as I'm leaving the plane, if we deplaning, so I walk in row 10, there's an open cabin for the bag. I throw it right in there. My seat's at like number 30. So I go all the way to the back of the plane, no bag in hand. I'm not wrestling it. And when the plane deplanes, I walk up. My bag is the only one. There's no one wrestling around to get something off. So I just literally just snatch it right out and just keep walking. I've been doing that since the 90s when I used to go to China all the time. Throw it right in any cabin that's available. It doesn't have to be over your seat, right? So when you walk out, breeze, grab it. This time when we landed in Birmingham, they're like, okay, we're all going to deplane from the back. I threw my bag in the very first cabin in like first class and now in the very back of the plane. And so I had to wait till everybody walked past me to be able to walk back. And then the captain and the steward is like, is everything okay? I'm like, my bag is the only one in the very first bin. And I grabbed it. And then, they go, you can leave through here now. You can come through our door. I'm like, no, I have to go back to my seat to get everything I left sitting on my seat. So by the time I walked off the plane, there wasn't a soul on the runway because it's one of those like Euro things where you walk down the steps and then have to walk to the building, follow the lines. I get off the plane at the back of the plane. There isn't one person on the tarmac. Not one. Everybody had already like done their thing and gone. And I didn't even know where to go into the building. I just kind of followed some sign and I was like, I guess this is it. And I walked in, there's like brooms and like pails in the corner. I'm like, I guess, and the elevator didn't work. And so I walked up the stairs and I found myself in the airport again. So I started walking towards what looked like passport control. There wasn't one person there. And I walked, and you couldn't walk. So I had to like zigzag down the ribbons to get to the front. And there's like a construction site. All the booths are being remade. I had no idea where to go. And so I just follow around and I follow a little stairwell. And there's one woman and she goes, please start this way. And I follow and then I go through the little metal, the glass door phone booth where they just look at your face and it pops open. And that was it. And I was in England. That was it. And I laughed. I'm like, that's passport control. Because I was about 3 minutes behind everybody, there wasn't anybody there. So that was exciting. I thought I was going to end up on another airplane going to a different part of the world.
I have the most amazing airport hack, but it's only for Delta in Detroit.
Right.
So if you're flying out of Detroit and you're at Delta, usually after you check in from the counter, you go right to go through the security line. Security lines can be crazy long and loud and rude.
Detroit is a huge airport.
If instead of going right to the security line, you go left and there's an entrance to the Westin Hotel. And you go down this really long hallway and then you go down some steps and then the Westin Hotel has its own security check-in. And there is usually no line. There's nice music playing. It's dark. There's mood lighting and the security people are all nice. It is. And then you can go through that. And then instead of going to the hotel, you go out into whatever where you wait for your plane, whatever that is called. And it works. We've done it at least a dozen times. One time the hotel was under construction and it didn't work and we had to walk all the way back, but it's such a great hack.
Wow. That's cool. I will probably never fly out of Delta and Detroit, but it's good to know.
Yeah.
Well, people were confused because I did not want to, I could do two things. I could drive to Boston, which is what I often do because Derek and I fly together. Derek's son has college graduation, so Derek couldn't come. It just coincidentally was the same exact day. So that's usually what I've done over the years is fly to Boston, drive to Boston 3 hours, and then we fly out together. And in this case, since I was traveling alone, I also didn't want to drive down to JFK because that would have been 3 or 4 hour ordeal and you have to get there early and that would have been a nightmare that down there is too congested. So Rachel helped me book a ticket. I said, we'll just go out. I'll just go out of Albany. So that I had to get to Albany, then I had to fly to Detroit, then I had to fly to Paris, then I had to fly to Birmingham. That's all because the tiny airport at Birmingham doesn't take in giant flights from across the water and also so doesn't Albany. So I have to go to like a big airport and a big airport. I got to go to a big airport in America, a big airport in Europe to get to those two little connections or leave out of those. And it was definitely inconvenient to have to switch, but the inconvenience of driving to either of those big U.S. airports, it's the same difference. But here I just had to drive 30 miles to my airport and then 30 miles home. And all the inconvenience was in the switching. I didn't miss any connections, and everything went fine. So all this.
You know, we typically don't drive to like a distance to get to an airport because we'll fly out of Louisville or at worst Nashville. We've gone out of Nashville a couple times, which is like 2 hours from us. But when we went to Sedona for spring break,
hello,
my dogs. Apparently, somebody's here. We went to Sedona. We took like Allegiant, I guess, is the is like one of the cheap airlines, and they only fly from certain places to certain places on certain days, right? And then the return flight is only on a certain day, and so not all you can't get to all of their endpoints from all of their start points or whatever, and so we had to go out of Cincinnati, and which wasn't a huge deal. It's 2.5 hours or so, but it was, I think, the first time. Well, it was definitely the first time we've all flown together. We took the whole family and one of my daughter's friends, and we had never flown with everybody before. So I was a little anxious about just like, just a lot of people and a lot of kids and stuff. And then we were going to an airport that I don't know. We had to drive there, fly to Phoenix, and then at the end of the trip, do the reverse. So we ended the trip with like a 2.5 hour drive after being on like a 4 hour flight or whatever. And so I was a little bit like not looking forward to that whole hopping and driving and everything. And it was perfect. It was easy. Like Cincinnati's not big. The one we flew into in Phoenix, there's a couple in Phoenix, and the one we flew into was like really small, like as big as my house. So that's an exaggeration, but it was very small. And so that whole process was pretty easy, which has now made me start to look at, oh, well, where else could we fly if we just are willing to drive, a couple hours to get to a different start point. So,
yeah, but it was all no problems whatsoever in as far as the travel, aside from just a little waiting, but it's obviously part of the deal. But Maker Central itself was a great show. And I was saying before we got started, so many wonderful, warm, wonderful fans are asking me about you guys. And so many people say they get so much out of the show. And it was just really heartwarming to hear so many positive things about what we've been doing for so long. And I met a gentleman that says he's on like episode 14. He said he started listening a few years ago. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to go to the beginning. And he's working his way through the beginning, which is crazy. And so many more people asked me about this show than I ever expected. And it's great.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So everyone's listening. I met several patrons that have been patrons for a long time. So thank you to you guys. And it was great.
And people are concerned. You said people are concerned about us.
Yeah, they're worried about you. It's like, I love the show. The show's great. Is Bob okay? Is Bob okay? Is Dave ever going to leave his house? I'm like, no, yes and no. Yes and no. It's like therapy, it is. I'm like, yep, it is. It is. It's like therapy for all three of us, especially Bob.
Yeah, fair enough.
Bob does the show laying on his back, by the way, for his interest.
I have this really great couch that I lay on.
Yeah, no, it was really, really heartwarming to hear so many positive reviews of the show and long-term fans. So thank you.
Yeah, that's really good. That's awesome.
So we get together, the three knuckleheads here, and I made the joke years ago. I'm like, still, this is it? Still, we want to do this? We really want to do this before we turn on the mics. But that was years ago, and we're still here, and we're still doing it. And we're just three idiots talking to each other, but it really means a lot to a lot of people. Obviously us too, of course, but it's just nice to know that it's making a connection.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. That's it. I'm going to go cry now.
Yeah, I mean, three idiots. That's we could rename it. So about the show, like what was different this year? What was?
Oh, I got to see Colin. Actually, the few stage things were really sweet. I don't want to say anything about what Bobby talked about because maybe in the after show. But Bobby was on stage and he was so open and honest, Bobby Duke. And I said to him later, I was like, Bobby, your heartfelt conversation really brought a tear to my eye. He's such a sweet guy. Bobby's just, he's like an innocent child that is just like a natural born artist. And I know Bobby doesn't listen to this. He doesn't listen to anything. But Bobby Duke was just so sweet on stage. And then we had dinner together at Nando's with a bunch of people. And I sat here, Bobby, and he was cracking me up, just telling me crazy stories. He's got some medical issues. He's totally fine. But he was just telling me about his medical procedures, just like an innocent child. And the way he sees things backwards and upside down is just so funny. So, I mean, maybe that's my pick of the week. If you don't know Bobby Duke, go check out Bobby Duke Arts. But we just so funny and sweet. And like I said, I'll tell you what he said in the after show, which is really touching. And listening to Colin Furze was great. So like you've been there, Bob, and these stages are usually in the middle of chaos and it's hard to hear anything. But this time around, the stage was off in the corner. And I did two talks where I did bandsaw demonstrations and made things for the kids in the audience, which was really sweet. And so the audio was better and the positioning of the stage was better, all the way off in the corner. With typically in the past, they always felt like they were completely in the round and there was just so much chaos going around. It was distracting. So that was one thing that was different. And in general, just saw a lot of the same people, met a few new people, but it seems like I met about 75% of the people I've met before. And they've all come back. And I didn't go last year just because of just chaos. And so many people like, I missed you last year. I only came to come to see you this time, which was very nice. Not everybody, but it was nice. So many people came because they knew I was going to be there again. And it was cool. It was cool. And one thing that was really nice is flying into Birmingham. It's just a small free tram ride and a walk to the hotel versus flying into London, which is, it's nice if you get the time. And flying into, but you remember those first couple of years, Bob, how many Americans were there? Like tens of Americans, like maybe, I don't know, 25, 30 Americans. Me and Chris Chops, if you guys know Chris Chops, who does all the hands. Mm-hmm. Me and Chris's wife, Mary, were there. We were the only Americans that I knew that were there. Were in our
and Bobby
friend group. And Bobby, of course, yeah. But as far as like, you know, the people coming to see the show just to hang out. That was it. Yeah. But
it's more expensive time than it was when that first year.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, obviously the world's a chaos and people don't want to get arrested at the border, but I'm not saying that was that bad, but everyone's pumping the fear into you. But what was I going to say? Oh, I don't know if you heard the chaos. So Bobby and Nicole flew from Texas to Boston to switch and the flights were delayed. So they missed their connection. And I get there and I know Derek's up at 4 a.m. So I checked in with Derek. I was like, hey, what's up? He's like, Bobby Duke's in my apartment downstairs. I said, what is he doing there? He said, him and Nicole got a late connection. It was due to the airlines. And he's like, hey, Derek, we're in Boston. Are you around? Can you come grab us? So Derek picked them up and they got a flight the next day, which is why Bobby was late to the show. It was the airline problem. And so it was nice. Derek's like, I don't know why. Bobby's like, hey, can I spend the night at your house? And then Derek drove him to the airport the next day. So Bobby came in a little bit late. I was doing my line. I had my big line of people coming in and taking pictures. And then Bobby showed up and my whole entire line just literally just took a half step to the side in front of Bobby. And I started working Bobby's line like I was selling tickets to a concert. I was like, anybody want an autograph? Anybody want a free autograph?
But that's funny.
It was a good time. I'm really glad I went. It was nice. I was a little, you know, like I said, when I'm flying home, Rachel's like, how do you feel? I was like, I'm just so glad that this is behind me. This was just the anxiety of flying to Europe these days. It's just, it's not as fun as it used to be. Only because there's just so many other things I'd rather be doing, you know, in the shop and the projects. And yesterday I spent the day, just my first day back, doing yard work. Some of the grass is overgrown, just doing some yard work and jumping into the car. This weekend's video is going to be the car. Episode 3 of the Cadillac build. I made some milestones, so I'm going to put out a video on that. And so that's what I just immediately started working on. The car and just cleaning up and organizing. Oh, and yesterday I put together, I don't know if you saw my stories, I put together a giant welding table. Fireball tools. Something welding table. It's crazy. I might have to make another building.
You might have to.
I'm going to make a welding studio. It actually wouldn't be a bad idea. Just have a dedicated spot for welding. Yeah, I'll think about it.
It's like when you go on the lot for like Universal or Paramount, and there's a building for each different show or movie.
Years ago, my brother
for the buildings.
My brother Joey was having some difficulties, and he needed to be alone. So I said, "Come stay with me." So three summers ago, my brother stayed with me, and my brother Joey is somebody who's not on social media at all, so nobody really knows him. And he's like, this place is like insane. And he's kind of making fun of me, but complimenting me at the same time, which is what he's really good at. He's like, it's like Disneyland. It's like, would you please like to step on the tram? If you look to the left, you'll see the blacksmith attraction. As we go around, the horse barn attraction. And as we come around, this is where there's a TV show. He's like, you have everything. You got like one of everything. It's like, it's insane. It's insane.
I mean, he's joking, but have you thought about a tram system?
That would be a bad idea.
That would be cool.
On my to-do list, I went and I bought $700 worth of batteries for my golf cart yesterday to try and fix it. Speaking of tram. And because I feel like the guy on, what is that island with the dinosaurs? What is that movie? Jurassic Park. Yeah. I feel like the old man with the beard driving around in the golf cart when I show people around. I'm like, to the left, you'll see the blacksmith attraction. But my golf cart doesn't work. And I put three brand new batteries in it yesterday at 200 and change each, and it did not fix the problem. So I found a golf cart repair company in Albany. I might try and bring that up there. My golf cart just went kaputsky over the winter. I don't know why.
I can't believe you're not going to try to fix that yourself and like turn it into some sort of a mobile welding.
You know, electronics is, when it comes to electronics and that type of stuff, I'm lost. My brother can fix it. So when Joey was here, he got it working again to this point. Now I think the battery's crapped and I put new batteries in and it wasn't it. And I probably crossed the wire reassembling them. I checked my pictures. Everything looks right, but I don't know. Now it's not taking any charge. One of the batteries keeps heating up. So maybe one of the old ones. So I might have to switch that one, but I'm going to just take it to a repair shop. I'm going to say, you guys take this thing. I don't care what it costs. As long as it doesn't cost as much as a new one, I'll just buy a new one. Just revamp it. Yeah. So that's my tram system, is the golf cart.
But you got to get like at least a couple of little cars that you can pull behind it.
Universal
the seats studio. Come from the outside so they can step onto it and turn around and sit down. And then that way you can pull more people through and show them.
When I did the TV show Making It, I go for walks on Universal lot. And you'd always have to stop, and the car would pull like 16 people, 17 like people on these little cars behind. Like, it was like, oh, wait. And then they're walking by, driving by.
In the studio tour.
It's like, that's Jimmy DiResta for Making It. Nobody knows who he is. Just ignore him.
Cool. Well, David, you didn't go to England.
I did not.
Did you?
I didn't leave the house.
Oh, nice.
I'm currently putting the shop back together. So we went through the floor leveling.
Yeah, so how did that go?
Okay.
Oh, what happened?
I've decided, like, I did what I could. Not
you're
gonna,
just going to
talk
heel?
About it no more. I'm not going to complain.
You're going to get one big heel on one show and just not talk about it?
Yeah. So what had happened was, I didn't plan on making a video about this, but I have been, you know, just grabbing a little action cam, doing time lapses of things and just documenting the process so I could just show my Patreon people. But there's so many layers to this that it's now turning into a full blown video. Oh. So shop's crazy uneven. And we had a concrete company come out and they pumped foam underneath the slab so they can level things out. We talked about it, I think, a couple weeks ago. And they warned me, since the pour wasn't perfectly flat, that we will, you know, we'll get the slabs level, but it's still not going to be flat. I'm like, cool. Let's just get to this point. And so how they do this is they drill holes into the concrete and then they force to like an epoxy. It's basically an expanding foam. And they force that under the slab. It expands and lifts up the slab. And so they start with the back and things were going really good. They were able to get that pretty darn level. And then when they got towards the middle where the huge pitcher's mound hump is, they noticed that instead of 4 to 6 inch concrete, it was 10 inches plus. So it looked like the slab was poured on top of a previous slab. And they're like, yeah, just let you know, this happens every once in a while. But you know, we can still do what we can. And there's no like major cracks in the foundation. So we're kind of confused on like why things were done this way. And he was just making guesses. Like this is just shoddy work. That's all. And so when we got to the front of the building, they pumped as much as they could until the building started to shift, and you can only go so far and then doorways get screwed up and don't work. So we did what we could, and that whole process was like $3,200. And I knew it wasn't going to be perfect because the pour wasn't perfect, but I thought it was going to be a little bit better. My expectations were a little bit more, is what it is. And so there's still a hump in the middle. Couldn't bring up the edges enough to get rid of the hump. And then there's still little dips and valleys. So I'm like, all right, I am going to do a concrete pour, not over the whole thing, just in the worst areas, just to make things a little bit more gradual. And I do that and I got rid of some of that. But the hump in the middle is so high that I wouldn't even be able to do a full pour. It would have, like, each bag of leveling concrete is like $33. I use 7 bags to get rid of the worst dips. Like, were rain puddles. If it was out in the open, where the rain puddles would go. And it would have taken thousands of dollars of this concrete leveler to do the whole thing anyway. But he wouldn't even be able to do the whole thing because the middle is so high that it's above the doorways thresholds.
Oh.
So, I level it out and like it is much better than it was before. And there's still a grade, but it's way more gradual and there's not huge dips and valleys. And then I decided to put in the dry core subfloor over top of that, which is 2-foot by 2-foot sheets. It's got a vapor barrier on the bottom, and then we'll do the carpet tile on top. Previously, the carpet tile was just right on the concrete. And this is going to be much easier on my feet. It's going to deaden the sound even more, and it's going to make the grade even more gradual. And it turns out, after I get all the dry core subfloor put in, that because it's not perfectly flat, that there's a bounce to it. So if you walk past the camera tripod, the camera goes up and down. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Yeah. So, and the trick is, you have to, there's a couple ways to battle that, but a common way is just to put another subfloor over top of that 4x8 sheets of OSB, and that takes care of it. And we did try shimming, but it would be shimming, you know, 144 of these squares or whatever it was to do the garage. Yeah. And so I shimmed as much as I could, but it wasn't going to take out all the bounce. I thought it was going to be good enough. So you can screw down some of the dry core subfloors and that removes some of the bounce. There's also another trick, and it didn't work for me. It was where you drill a hole and then you put a foam expander, like what you would get for your windows and doors, underneath there. and it would fill the space, and it didn't really, it helped, but it didn't fix it. So I screwed down as many as I could, and then bought OSB subfloor to go on top of that. That took care of it. That took care of all the bounce. So there's no more bounce, but it was
Is your head rubbing the ceiling yet?
So the ceiling was about eight feet, 1 inches. It's now probably just under, it's probably 8 foot. We probably lost a whole inch.
Right.
Maybe a little bit more.
That's plenty of it.
Got the subfloor down. I'm putting carpet dowels down now. Almost done. It is so much better, but it is not perfectly flat. And this would be the last time I talk about it. I'm not going to complain about it anymore. But the whole video, I've got time lapses. I even got the concrete guys on camera. They watched my YouTube videos the night before, and they're like, "Oh, it's so cool to be in a YouTuber's space." And I was like, "Oh, great." You know, I'm always uncomfortable with talking to strangers, and then it's always weird talking about yourself. But these guys were cool. So I got them to explain on camera what was happening, what was going on, and it's a whole video of like, well, you. Basically, you can do things right the first time, but to do things right the first time is not always in your budget. So you go one route and you hope that this helps, and maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. And if it doesn't work, you got to do another fix. So the whole video is like the ups and downs. Looking back, maybe it would have been great to just take jackhammers to the floor, grind it down, and do a re-pour over top of that when we first got the house. That would have been amazing. Maybe it would have been great to do that now, but there's also electrical on the floor, and electrical would have to come up, and then you'd have to pour, and then you have to remove the concrete where the electrical is going to go for the box. Like,
yeah,
it's a whole ordeal. It's we're putting the shop back together now. It's almost done. And this will be the last time I will ever complain about it, because I did what I could.
Right.
And it's better. It's just not perfect.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, did you expect it to be perfect, or were you were just trying to make it better? Like, was the goal to get it completely flat? And realistically,
I didn't think it was going to be perfect, but I thought it was going to be very close. And it's definitely going to be better. It's not like, it's very disorienting previously before, when you would just walk down an aisle and you go up and down and it's weird and you have to have one shoe that's bigger than the other for it to feel right. That's mostly taken care of. I've noticed this about myself just recently on walks. And when I see a house that I like, and I see a house that like has potential that I don't like, one of the main things is when you see a perfectly flat yard and the house is well kept, it looks so pleasing to me. It looks like that house has no problems. But when you see a house and the yard has these dips and valleys, and I look at it, I'm like, I wonder if there's foundation issues. Like, I think I just like perfectly flat things, and maybe I'm expecting too much of what I have, but it would be really nice to just have a perfectly flat floor. It really would.
Yeah, of course it would. Yeah. Well, and I'm sorry it didn't turn out like perfectly flat. But.
Yeah. And all in all, I'm probably around $5,000 deep into it, and it doesn't, because of the pour was $3,200, and then the subfloor plus the other subfloor plus Tapcon screws are stupid expensive, and then you got to pay your brother to help you out. Probably about $5,000. I'm trying to convince myself that it was $5,000 well spent. It does, like, down the road, the $5,000 won't mean anything. But right now, like when the bank accounts are low, and I just got done paying all the April taxes, it feels like I have no money left to do anything anymore. It feels I'm just in this weird, weird spot. And then taxes are due in June in like another 3 weeks. I'm like, how am I going to pay for all this? So it was worth it. I'm just trying to convince myself that it was worth it right now.
Yeah. Well, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when I was in the basement at the other house, that floor wasn't flat. But it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't flat. And I just guys, all I want is my workspace to be absolutely perfect. Is that too much to ask? That's all I want.
That seems reasonable to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my shop floor, you know, it was a poured basement, you know, like 40 something years ago. And so being perfectly flat wasn't a big consideration, I wouldn't imagine. And it has a couple of drains in it, which I don't know if that's a thing that most, you know, most floors or basements or shop spaces or whatever, if they have a drain, then it has to slope a little bit, you know, on purpose. So it's not going to be perfectly flat. But I've got a couple of spots in mind where I know that if I'm going to build something on the floor, I can't lay it right there. Because that spot, if I turn it the wrong way, it's going to be like high here, low there, whatever. And then I have one that's pretty close, like close enough. But yeah, I think that's probably an issue with every concrete floor. So I said last week that we've been having a pool put in. We had our deck, the concrete deck, poured this last week. And they did a good job. I don't want to badmouth concrete people, but two groups of concrete people that we've dealt with are not highly motivated to be really precise. You know what I mean? I get that. I understand it, because when you see the amount of effort, like physical effort, that goes into pouring a really big area and getting it sloped correctly, and then getting it finished and getting it edged, and all of this process they have to go through, it's like a lot of stuff and a long process, very physical. And so I can understand that as a homeowner, the level of detail that I'm looking for is not realistic in, you know, to the physical effort that they're having put in to get like 95-97% awesome. Mm-hmm. You know? Well, yeah, but what about that corner right there? It's not quite, you know. Yeah, so I understand that, but go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, when you deal with contractors, there are contractors that are really expensive, and then there are contractors that are, you know, normally priced. And there's a different level of precision. Like, you know, there's the team that comes in, and they're just there to do the job. They're just there to renovate the kitchen or whatever. And then there's the contractor that has like designers and interior designers in the same group, and they do care about the details. Like, we've all the screws on the outlets were all turned in the same direction when they left, and the caulking or the silicone is, you know, perfectly smooth. You pay for that, and it's just a kind of it's a different mindset.
Yeah. And that's where I was headed with that, is like the contractor and then the subcontractor thing is there's a significant difference, you know, between like the general contractor, like the people we're using for the pool. They have a team of people that do the majority of the work, but then they contract out, you know, they have to do the electrical contract. They have to do the concrete. We only have like two concrete pouring companies in town. And they're really busy this time of year. Obviously, the pool company is not going to have their own concrete truck, so they have to sub that stuff out. Mm-hmm. And yes, exactly what you're saying. The people that I'm paying to put in the pool care about all the details, and they care about all of, and they're running a lot of stuff at one time. There was a little gap in this. There's an inlaid piece of metal in the deck, and there was a little gap around the outside of it. And I sent them a picture, and I was like, I'm not trying to be picky, but this doesn't look very good. And his response was, there is no way I would ever leave it like that. Trust me. I promise you, there is a piece of trim that we haven't brought over yet that covers that thing. And he was very like responsive, and it's totally fine for you to ask. It's your pool and we want it to be right, but I would never, ever leave it like that. And there's a level of care there that's different than the concrete contractor, who's just like, you know, I get here at 5 o'clock in the morning, I do concrete for several hours, and then I'm done and I'm out and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I get it.
My brother and I, he's a half brother. So we don't, you know, we share the same mom. We have different dads. We have two complete completely different work attitudes. I am about precision. I'm about details. He is about brute force, get things done as fast as you possibly can, damage things on the way out the door. Like, when moving stuff, he just wants to work so fast, and he doesn't care about walls and stuff. He's like, we just got to move this, and it's got to get there right away. And he has to be busy all the time. So, like, there's a lot of downtime when you're filming because, you know, sometimes sanding takes forever, or you're waiting for glue to dry. He can't just sit there. He has to be doing something. And I like to take things slow, and it's, we have just two completely different personalities. And it's really, he's the best worker I've ever worked with. He shows up early every single time. He will stay as long as I need him. But when it's time to go, he is out. It barely says goodbye and he's out the door. He least gives the impression that he loves physical labor and willing to do whatever. But I don't know how to communicate. Like, we need to slow down, and it's okay to not do anything. This isn't, you know, like, I know you've had jobs before where it's, you know, you do the work as fast and as efficient as possible. This is not what we do here. And I don't want to offend him because he's such a hard worker. And so, yeah, we just have two different approaches to work.
And that's the case with a lot of, you know, a lot of teams, a lot of people that work together in all different industries, is you have that kind of the precision person and then the, you know, brute force, get it done person.
Yeah.
And I think I'm those people. I'm both of those people on different days.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I can do both. I can certainly do both.
I think some of my precision and details comes from a professor that I had in college, Dr. Jones. He was the head of the graphics department where I went to school, and it was always the details matter, even the stuff that people will never see. So the presentation back, we had computers, but you had to do a lot of things by hand when I was going to school for graphic design. So you had to mat everything, and then you had to have this, like, I forget what it's called, like tracing paper to protect the artwork, and then you turned it in. And the presentation of the artwork that you turned in was just as important as the artwork. Yeah. And so I've always learned that the details matter. And I don't think he gets that. He's like, nobody's ever going to see the bottom of this. I'm like, yeah, but it matters to me because I care about this. And
you know, you remind me of a funny story.
Go ahead.
My brother Joey and myself and my dad would always work together while I was in college doing construction. My dad was sort of a mercenary carpenter. He would be hired for special situations and getting things done quick, and he would always drag us two along, and we'd be on certain jobs. And I always took care because I was in architecture school, and then, you know, I thought I was like this highfalutin builder, and so I'd always take time and care at the time, and my brother Joey would rush through stuff, and he would often say, no one's going to see it, it's going to be hidden. And my dad would always say, no one sees your underwear, but you put on a new pair every day, don't you? And
I like that. That's
one. My dad had a couple of those, and that was one of them. He's like, my brother's, no one's going to see it, it's in the wall. I'm like, yeah, but you change your underwear every day too, huh? No one's going to see that? So that's my dad's quip. They always argued. So there's lots of funny banter coming out of that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. But I still think of that. And even Patrick's just texting me now. We're talking about something that we're going to work on after the podcast. But I told Patrick that 10 years ago or 7 years ago, and he always reminds me. He's like when we're looking at something, we know, like, we don't, neither one of us want to deal with it. And we go, you change your underwear every day, don't you? No one sees that. Let's just fix it. Because I told him that story. So that's always kind of fresh on mine.
Sometimes when I'm working on something and I'm like, this is a part that nobody's going to see, I have to just accept that this part is not going to be perfect and move on. And it feels like I'm taking a shortcut, and it just doesn't feel right, but it's necessary to, sometimes it's more important to move things along instead of being stuck on an area.
Well, I was working on the car last night because I want to try and move it along because now it's getting into the summer and I know the car drives. Now it's really up to me to do the cosmetics. And so I'm playing with the car last night. And I had to retrofit the fenders. I had to cut apart all the metal work that I put in there, which was fine. It was all kind of temporary. And now I'm putting it back, and now I don't have body mounts at the very back of the car. And I was like, do I need to make L brackets with rubber mounts? And I'm thinking to myself, it doesn't matter. No one's going to remove the body from this frame. Never. It's never going to be that kind of like restoration of a restoration of a restoration. No one cares. So I was able to just put a chunk of wood underneath where I put the new metal. It's just one little spot. But I had to come to that, I had to make that decision. But I did have to make sure the two chunks of wood I put on the left and right, I made sure that at least they were the same size. So when this car gets excavated or pulled out of, you know, if we have a Mount Vesuvius situation here in northern New York, when they take the car apart in 2,000 years and they slowly, the archaeologists go, oh, at least they use two of the same size chunks of wood in the back, right? On the left and right side. Okay, at least he took some care. Even though he didn't have
to be like, this must have been where bandsaws came from because there's so many of them.
Yeah, this must have been the bandsaw church. I and this is off topic, but I often think about that. Like when they find in 5,000 years when they're doing archaeological digs on this civilization and they find millions of bottle caps and, but you know, they'll attribute some stupid thing like, oh yeah, these were this is when they prayed to you know, their god.
Yeah, this must have been their currency.
Exactly. Yeah,
what is Bud Light?
Must have been the name of their president.
Yeah.
Yeah, these like multiple things, like what, like they attribute some fake thing to what a straw is. This is what turtles use to breathe.
Yeah, back to your thing. I definitely have had to get myself into that same mindset with the Ghia. And even though, you know, it's so slow, that whole thing is just so slow, I've had to accept this part is the inside underneath of so-and-so. Like, if somebody is looking at that, then they've missed the fact that I rebuilt the entire outside of the car. You know what I mean? And it matters, but it also doesn't matter if it's structural, if it does the thing it's supposed to do, if it's going to stay together and nobody's going to see it, then like, that's fine. And I would rather spend that same amount of time getting the curves of the outside of the panels smooth, because that's the part when you drive down the street, that's the part that people are going to see and go like, oh, wow, that looks terrible. Or man, he really didn't know what he was doing. Or wow, look at that, you know? So
it goes back to the haircut thing. Like, you get a new haircut and you're like, everybody's going to notice my new haircut and it's terrible. Nobody notices.
Nobody cares.
You know, yeah. we just overthink it.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. Well, so let's see, for me this last week, I was showing you guys this piece and I'll show it on here as well. So I started working with cutting metal with the CNC, the laser CNC thing on the metal fab.
Yeah. And that's really cool.
Bonkers. Like the welder, yeah, it's cool, it's a welder, you know. And I mean, it's fine, it's amazing, but it's, you know, it's a welder. But I this is brass. This is like, not, I don't know, 1 mil, maybe half mil. But it cut this piece out, which is not a complicated piece, it was just a test piece I was doing, but it did this in like 10 or 12 seconds and just perfect. It wasn't hot. I reached in and I picked it up and it was like, I don't know. It's wild to me. And I know that people with plasma tables who are using them a lot, and they're like, yeah, that's, we can cut metal, no big deal. But this was precise. It was fast. And I just ran a file over the edge, like just one pass, and it's totally good to go.
Is that a specific shape you're holding up, or is that a test shape?
No, it was just a test shape. I was trying to see, because I'm mating things together. So I was trying to get an inside, outside curves, sharp corners, rounded corners, inside shapes, you know. It was a test to see if I can get this to fit into another material. And so I was, go ahead.
Sorry. What's the kerf like on that thing?
There is no kerf. And that's the crazy thing. What? I mean, there is, there always is, but it's a laser. So,
kerf,
and that's
kind
of what I'm testing, is like 30 between thou? Multiple machines. I don't know. I mean, I haven't looked it up, but I was trying to see you know, between two different machines, how close can I get the shapes, the inside and the outside shapes to be? And it works super well. So
that's awesome.
You know, yeah, I'm impressed. But that was fun to play with the other day. I just went out there and just tried to see if I could get it to work. And the welding, the laser welder, there was a lot of trial and error to get it to actually start doing the thing it was supposed to do. And then once I got it working, then it's adjusting settings and, you know, being more precise and getting better at it. So this was like, hit the button, put the metal in, hit the button, and it's done. Mm-hmm. You know, it was what it felt like it should be at this point for a machine like that. If you have something that says, like, we have a CNC with predefined materials, we have our own software that lets you bring in, if they sell it like that, it feels like it should be magical, kind of drop the piece in, hit the button, it's done the thing. The welder didn't feel like that yet to me. And, right. And I understand why. It's a welder. You're holding it. It's not the same right. thing. But this felt like the Glowforge experience, but with brass and yeah. aluminum. And man, that was cool. And I haven't tried any steel yet, but it can do steel as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that was pretty simple. Things go as planned, I'm supposed to get a laser cutter as well in the next several weeks, apparently. We'll see. When it shows up, obviously, I'll do all kinds of stories on it. But a company who makes these new cutters, it's not new. It's not new to the industry, but it's new to them. And they're developing their marketing for it. And they asked me, and I think Derek might get one too, if we would show it off. And so that's going to come soon. And that'll be cool. It's a 3 kilowatt. So it can cut up to 3/8 of an inch of mild steel. So it's going to really be a game changer. I have the plasma cutter, which is cool. And then this, which is going to be unbelievable. But I'll believe it when it happens, because there's a lot of hoops to jump through to get that up in here and in place. And it requires 3-phase electric. And there's going to be, it needs to come with a rigging company and an installer. So there's a lot has to happen. And I have to make a footprint for it. I know what I'm going to do, but I have to make a footprint for it. And that's going to be exciting to be able to do that. You could just cut stuff like the way you can cut cardboard and plastic and leather, you could do that with steel.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty wild. I cut some like thin aluminum flashing, you know, really flexible aluminum. Yeah. I cut some 1/8 inch and it did great, did fine. And then I was like, I want to see what it's like to cut foil, basically. And so I just laid down a sheet of flashing and cut out that same shape. And it took even less time, but it was so funny. As soon as it got over, you know, because flashing is rolled usually, so it had a little bit of curve to it, and I kind of flattened it out to lay it down. It cut that shape out, and as soon as it started cutting out, it just rolled itself up and, like, popped out of the thing. And then it was like it became a Pringle as soon as the laser head moved. It was just like, pop. Like, oh, there's the piece that I just cut out. And it's this little floppy, very precise little piece of aluminum. It was so cool. I don't know. I think you'll both really do some cool stuff with. And I think a lot of people are it's going to make projects way more intricate and interesting to be able to do that kind of stuff. Like, granted, they're expensive machines. It's going to take a little while for the price to come down, because a bunch of companies are doing similar things, and that should drive the prices down, I would hope, next couple of years.
I didn't go to FabTech, but Derek and Chris said they were there. They said that that's the new big thing, is laser cutting steel.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Metal.
I got a kit for a bumper. I bought it from there's a guy that's been making flat pack bumper, like off-road bumper kits, and he ships them, and it's all laser cut steel. And it's like, it's more than 1/4 inch. I don't remember how thick it is. Maybe 3/8. But
for the Rover Ranger?
Yeah, for the cruiser. And it's like, it's very, very clean. And I don't know what kind of machine he was using for it. But it was funny, because when I ordered it several months ago and it came in, I was like looking at the pieces and I was just like, man, it must be crazy to have a laser that could cut this thick steel this cleanly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now I have one that could do the exact same thing. It was so weird. But, you know, I don't...
Are you running hydrogen with it? Because if you run hydrogen with it, you get a perfectly clean cut. I don't think it's necessary, but if you do run hydrogen, you get like a chromed edge cut.
Oh, no, I haven't. No, yeah, it talks about using compressed air for this thickness, and then as you go to higher thicknesses, it says to use oxygen.
Oh, okay.
And I've tried to verify that because that seems dangerous to me, but that's what it's saying. So
yeah,
it has to be much higher, like pressure. Pure oxygen will let you cut up to 5 mil steel, and I think maybe even thicker than that.
Yeah, because the machine that I'm getting, you run hydrogen with it, and it'll make an absolute mirrored edge cut with no dross or anything front and back.
That's pretty.
But you gotta, you know, you gotta get tanks of hydrogen.
Yeah,
which is just you get from the your gas supplier, but.
So I'm excited to this little project I'm working on. Was a good reason to test cut that stuff. And so it was fun to test. And I'm also excited about how this little thing's going to turn out.
Yeah. Talk about precision. Was that a topic, today's topic, precision and doing things behind the scenes, changing your underwear?
Yeah, changing your underwear.
Yeah. Doing things no one's going to see.
Yeah.
To do it, make sure it's done right.
Yeah. Yep. So speaking of next, after I finish this thing, the next project is going to be a couple of videos of indoor like renovation. We have a room that we want to change, and it's a lot of stuff that I'll talk about it later, but it's a lot of stuff that I've done before. It's not, I don't know. It's not complicated, but it's going to be very visible in our house and very, you know, it's going to transform one room into kind of something else. And so it's one of those things that I'm having to slow down on designing and think about because I want it to look really good. I could just like, you know, make it for the video, I guess is the kind of the thing I don't want to do. I don't want to make it good enough for the video. I want it to be good enough and clean enough that when you look at it in person, you're like, oh, wow, this is nice. Not just like, because it's easy to get away with carpentry stuff on video with the kind of subcontractor mentality, you know, because you... can only get so close to it in a video, but anyway, so that's coming up and I'm starting to plan for that and trying to make sure that I'm doing it correctly and everything. But yeah, so I've been working on the metal thing, and what else have I been doing? It's end of year stuff right now, like school's out this week for my kids, and I forget every single year how complicated May is. Like, it's crazy. Just, there's end of year, they all have finals in all of their classes. They're all in, like, difficult classes. And so they have a ton of stuff to do. It's the end of the soccer season, so there's, like, championships and tournaments, and we've been in multiple cities the last couple of weekends at the same time in different places. There's end of year banquets for all of the things that they're involved in. Everybody we know is graduating, so there's graduation parties, and it's just like so. And then we have a bunch of family coming in to visit. And this month has been just a blur, trying to get work done, but also trying to keep up with all of these different things. And so I feel like I haven't gotten a whole lot done, but I've been moving, you know, the entire time. But going into summer, hopefully it'll cool off a little bit and chill out.
It's been weird. It's oddly cold still here.
Yeah, it's been cold.
It's been very cold.
Yeah, it's in the 60s this week here, which is kind of strange. But
it's the time of the year where you have the windows open and then the furnace kicks on. And you're like, oh, this is not supposed to be.
Speaking of furnace, this is weird, and this is not. It's just weird. I don't know. So the other day we have two air conditioning units and heaters for different parts of the house. And I was getting a quote from a plumber, and he needed to know the BTU of all of the different appliances in the house for the gas line. So I went to the units, and I had to take off the covers to look at the thing and whatever. Put the covers back on, and this was a couple of weeks ago. And so I went up to look at the thermostat last night, and one of the two thermostats just wouldn't turn on. So I charged it. Put it back on there, and it said that it didn't have power. So the whole AC unit has not been running for a couple of weeks, apparently. It didn't have power. And I got all like, oh, man, this is going to be expensive. Like, something's really wrong. Something. Went out this morning to look at it, down this morning, Turns out that, and this is a just a PSA for anybody else that might run into this, when you take off the panels on my train air conditioning unit on the inside, there's a push button that's in the corner, kind of hidden behind something that is like an on-off switch. And so when you push the panel in, it pushes this little hidden switch in to allow the whole thing to turn on. Well, when I put the panel back in, I just kind of like set it in place. I didn't engage it all the way. So there's like a kill switch that just was not being pushed, or not a, a live switch. I don't know, the opposite of that. And I just didn't push it all the way. So the whole thing has been off for a couple of weeks. And my daughter was complaining about her room being hot, and I didn't know. She didn't complain to me about it. I would have gone to look for it. But anyway, so there are hidden switches that are pushed by the covers of these things.
Sometimes. More and more new tools have those type of things. For instance, the Harvey bandsaw has that. So if you're not closing the doors correctly or completely. And the bandsaw that I used at the event had that. And it wouldn't turn on. And we were fiddling with it. We couldn't get it to turn on. And it was some debris was keeping the switch from clicking.
So I'm more dealing with that right now.
Lockout situations, which is so annoying.
I've got a big Laguna 14-inch bandsaw. It won't turn on. So we've been moving things around for the shop, and I needed to cut something last night, and it wouldn't turn on. And I was like, "Oh, did we screw up the outlets?" The 220. It's a 220 outlet. Plugged a table saw into it. That was fine. And there is a foot brake on this bandsaw, and sometimes that it would catch, but I can't figure it out. There's a sensor somewhere. It's a $2,000 machine, and I can't get it to turn on, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's just a simple switch somewhere. It's so annoying. When I sit, I have a zero-turn lawnmower, and every time I sit in it, if it's been a couple weeks, I forget the procedure. You got to sit perfectly. The handle's got to be in the right position. The switch has got to be down, and you got to sit upright. Yes. Otherwise, the click won't go on, and then you go to turn it
off. Can't lean too far forward, and
more products like that. More and more products. I have a forklift that I bought years ago. Bought it used but reconditioned for. It was a considerable expense, and when I first got it. Occasionally, it'll be like, "Hey, you're not in the cab all the way." Things like, "Hey, get back in your seat," and I'm like, "Oh, okay," because it won't do anything. And now every single time I get in, it's like, "You're not sitting right. Put your back up." It just gives me this beep, 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 and then everything stops working. So I have to sit in it completely still, arms in, to play with the controls. So the thing's gotten much more temperamental. Whatever that device is that knows my arm is like out of the thing, I can't see any sensors on it. It's like an old school, maybe. Early 2000s machine that was I bought reused. I have to call the guys, but it is so annoying. I go to lift something, it's like, your hand's in the wrong spot, and it just stops lifting. I have to stay in like a little cube, just use my fingers to push all the knobs.
You just need a remote control it
with my back completely straight. If I like try and like get in it casually and like leave my foot on the running board, it's like no, put your foot inside.
Anyway, cool. Well, any other things going on?
I'm going to this Weaver event in Ohio. Dave, you don't have to come. It's in Eastern Ohio.
But I can if I want to, right?
It's up to you. Of course, you're welcome. But I'm not going to hold my breath. It's at Weaver's facility. Weaver has a retail shop, and it's a celebration of the anniversary of their retail shop opening. But it's also Maker Camp themed. So there's going to be classes, so go check it out. It's going to be the weekend of the 29th and the 30th. That's 10 days from now, maybe less. 8 days from now, next weekend. And I'll be there doing demonstration on how to cast pewter into Delft clay. Yeah. So come. I think Patrick's coming with me, and Austin from Maker Camp's coming with me. Driving.
Cool. Well, I won't be there either. Not that you asked me, but I'm not going.
They have you on scheduled.
Oh, wait, do they?
Yeah.
Well, that's a bummer for them. Big thanks to our Patreon supporters for supporting the show, for
thank
listening.
You. Well, and I met several of them this week, so thank you.
Yeah, for going all the way to England to talk to Jimmy.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're really grateful for all the support, especially the top supporters. They do more than they have to, and we're really grateful. That is A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Matthias Garnow, Crabtree Creative, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, The New Janky Workshop, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Low End Design, Chad from Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, Corey Ward, and Nick Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
But also a bunch of other people like Tom Funk.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Funk. There's a bunch of people, and we're really grateful for all of them. Everybody gets the after show, no matter the level you support at. So if you want to get that after show, it's another podcast. You go to patreon.com. Excuse me. My throat. Go to patreon.com/makingit and support at any level.
Mm-hmm.
Any level at all.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you all very much.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm doing it again. I have to stop.
Yeah, you're not supposed to. You said you wouldn't. you guys got anything to recommend this week?
I'll recommend just go check out Bobby Duke. I gotta be honest, I haven't seen his videos in a minute, but go check out Bobby Duke for a laugh and creative outlook on something you wouldn't expect. That's it.
My kids asked to watch Bobby's videos on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Like they, I mean, they're great. The videos are great. Not my kids. I mean, my kids are great too. Let me start over.
You're okay.
So, Bobby's videos are great. My kids are also great, and they love to watch Bobby's videos. So they ask all the time.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
He's a funny dude.
Yes, he is.
For me, I'm going with John. I'm sorry if I screw up your last name. I do not know how to pronounce it, but I think it's somewhere along the lines of John Kupoff. He's been long time. I should know how to say his name because he's been a long time supporter.
Kupoff. He said everybody destroyed it, so he said, don't worry about it. I probably said it wrong.
Yesterday, he put out a video about CNC, and it's a nice long video, and he does a different CNC technique with each letter of the alphabet. Mm-hmm.
Did you make it to Z?
I'm halfway through.
It's a surprise at letter Z.
Oh, I am on letter O right now, so a little past halfway. But it's fascinating of all the techniques that he does with the CNC. It's the video is so well done. I know it took him a whole year to make this video.
He's such a good filmmaker.
So freaking good. Yeah.
It took a year to make it.
Well, because he made the alphabet one at a time.
Well,
as he released them as reels. And now he put them all together and did a little quip after each letter. It'll tell you a little bit. And I'm in letter Z, by the way, just in case.
Spoiler alert.
He did letter Z at my shop bot.
I'm assuming the video is, and this is just an assumption, I could be wrong. I'm assuming the video is not performing as well as he would like because I've seen the thumbnail and the title change as I've gone to, I just watch a little chunk at a time. And I know that feeling. When you make such a great video mm-hmm. and you don't know how to package it in a way that makes people want to watch it, it is really good. And you don't even have to be in CNC.
That's the type of video that people are going to find when they search CNC forever. So it's going to be one of those videos that becomes an evergreen. It'll definitely gain an audience. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Cool. I will definitely go check it out. Awesome. I found a video. I think it's pretty new. But I've talked to you about. Oh gosh, I just lost his name. Ryan Cross on Instagram. He does like the. Anyway, okay. There's this guy, and he does really good car work, and he works at Crucible Metalworks. I think is what it's called. They do a bunch of really cool car videos, and they're actually making a drift Karmann Ghia right now. Like, they're taking a Karmann Ghia body and putting it on a drift car. It's pretty wild. But he works with Eastwood as well. And so Eastwood put out a video with him teaching how to TIG weld sheet metal, and he's doing for body work. And I've watched a lot of videos on that topic, on sheet metal, not on TIG, because I don't know how to do TIG. But I watched this one because I like the way that he talks about things and teaches, and I learned a whole lot about the TIG process for doing that, which has made me want to try to dive into TIG again and give it a shot. I've just never been able to figure it out. So that put that back on my list. But it's a good video talking about some his process for like putting in a new like he cut out a big section of fender, so it's a big long curve, and then put in a new one, and just the process for doing that. Pretty cool. Go check that out if you're interested.
I did a little Instagram story just before I went away. I'll send you guys pictures of the plumbing system that's being put in the barn. It looks like artwork. The guy that's doing it, he's a local guy I met through some of my local friends here, and he's putting the heating system in the barn, and he's doing a phenomenal job. It is just, it looks like he's doing it just because he likes making copper pipe elbows. It doesn't look like he's doing it's crazy. I'll send you a picture. But he's the one who asked me a couple weeks ago. He's like, hey, can you make me one? He goes, I heard you make things. The guy doesn't know anything about me. He's like, I heard you like make stuff. I'm like, yeah, I can make whatever you want. He's like, can you make me one of these things that holds an expansion tank? I'm like, he describes it to me. I'm like, yeah. He goes, all right, when I come back from the store, I'll get the parts and you could weld it up. I'm like, yeah, no problem. And so I TIG welded up this thing that holds an expansion tank on the wall, and it gets plumbed and it has to hold pressure. So when I'm TIG welding it, I'm like, I have to make sure every single dab of the TIG fills the dab after, because it has to be sealed. When he bolts it all together, it has to be sealed. So I made one for my wall, and then he saw it. He was very impressed. I showed it to him the next day. He's like, wow, can you make me like three more? I'm like, sure. So he went and got parts. I ended up making him just two more at the time. And I haven't seen him yet, but when I went in to see the work he did while I was gone, I was blown away. It's incredible. So the horse barn is going to have full-on heating system and a full-on plumbing system all on its own. Hot water, cold water, everything's going to be there. It's going to be basically its own standalone house.
He sounds like one of those detail-oriented people.
Oh, he really is. He really is. I'll send you guys pictures. You'll be blown away. And he's not even done yet. But I don't think I'll be able to afford my taxes when everything here is done. You know, when they do like the extreme home makeover, they make over the house, and the people are like, yeah, we're homeless now because we couldn't afford the taxes.
Yeah.
I'm going down that road.
The trick is you got to keep the outside of the house looking bad. That way, when the county assessors come around, they're like, nah, I don't think we need to go into that one.
They all know me. They all know me, unfortunately. You're the guy that's on TV? I'm like, yeah, okay. I'm trying to grab the paper. Oh, I heard about you. I'm like, oh, ha, ha, ha.
Mayor DiResta. That's why you got to run.
Well, I'm not doing so well these days.
Yeah. The views are really down. Over. All my arrows are red. They're like, oh, okay. You must be rich anyway.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Thank
you. We will see you.
See you in Ohio. Not you, Dave. Everybody else.
We'll see.
You're not coming. I don't think I can. Don't tease me. You gotta level your floor. You got more work to do.
I got more work to do.
Bye, guys. Love you.
Bye-bye.